When the world is crap and you've got the blues, just take a break from all that horrible news for something crazy, amazingly clever and never half-assed.
Except when it is.
Yes, it's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. This song is almost over, girl, so wipe your tears. You're in for a treat and feast your ears on this remarkable feat. Yes, it's a famous celebrity finally podcasting at last. This shit is revolutionary.
Randy Rainbow's Podcast. The Randy Rainbow Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Randy Rainbow Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Lee Curtis, and I am here in studio with the usual suspects, including my friend Paul Pecorino, who's back.
I'm back.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Last we spoke, we got in a huge fight. Not really, but I kind of was ribbing you for that.
There was a lot of tension.
There was a lot of tension, which is usually, that's parallel to what our relationship is, I think.
But we have some updates to share. Well, first of all, let's not just talk about me because I would rather talk about me. But let's get you out of the way first.
That'll be first.
Let's talk about you. What do you think
really?
Of me? No, Paul, we were talking about when last we spoke, you were, well, what stage were you with your, because Paul wrote a musical and performed it and entered it into the New York Theater Festival. Mm-hmm. And what stage were you in when we were here last?
I forget. Did I announce that I won? I don't know. I won
the
festival.
No one cared.
I know. No one cared.
No one was even listening.
No one cares.
Fabulous.
I don't know if we mentioned that. I think it was prior. I had been nominated.
You'd been nominated.
I won Best Production of 2022 of the New York Theater Festival.
The son of a bitch won.
Thank you.
A huge ovation.
You can now call me Stephen Sondheim.
Well,
okay, all right, that might be too much. I'm gonna get so much hate email on you.
It's on par for the course with this podcast of mine. Everyone hates everyone.
So what happens now?
Yeah, so what happens now? Congratulations. This is huge news. And now
thank you.
They invite you to enter it into the next level. Is that what?
Well, now it's been entered to the National Alliance for Musical Theater, which is sort of the next level up, prestigious competition, where they choose 8 musicals after I don't know how many, and then they fully fund and work with you with, you know, industry professionals in kind of cultivating and bringing your musical up to the next level. So that's where I'm at now. The musical was just submitted. I felt like I was applying for Harvard. The application took me 2 days. Oh, they wanted everything, including my blood type, my firstborn.
So, and now you just wait and see.
Now I wait. It's all a waiting game.
Well, that's fabulous.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking.
Well, I'm very proud of you.
Thanks, Randy. Wait, what did you just say?
It's just because we're on the air. Can you save this and give it to him so he can just rerun it when he needs some time?
I want that on repeat.
You just play that back whenever you need some friendship.
This is delightful. I'm so glad I'm back.
Some reinforcement for me, because you know you're not going to get it otherwise.
Unless
there's a camera rolling, I do not show up for my family.
This is very true.
No, well, I'm very thrilled for you.
Thanks. We'll see what happens.
Good.
Maybe coming to a theater near you.
Also, we should update, because I was giving you a lot of shit for not having read my book. And we have an update on that too, I understand.
We do. First of all, we brought in the new year together.
We did.
Which we had a fabulous time.
Yes,
we went to the public and we saw
Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt, who we absolutely adore, yes.
Oh, God, I love her.
Even though she didn't give me a hug at the end, I was mad about
that. See, Paul gets very offended, like, when celebrities don't crawl into his lap and start nursing on his teat. I guess because I'm a huge star, I don't expect that. No, I never have expected that or wanted or would assume that someone would give you the time of day.
Well, I have
but
a
you
lot
are
of,
very personally affected
I do.
By
I have
those
a lot
things.
Of abandonment issues. And I think that's another. That's my book.
You think I'm a barrel of monkeys over here?
Speaking.
I've got my own troubles.
And now I understand more and more because I have begun reading your book.
Playing With Myself, the New York Times best-selling memoir?
Yes.
Wait, Randy wrote a book?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
And you know what? It was given to me
by who?
As a Christmas gift by Randy himself.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It was very sweet.
Well, I had to. He gave me no fucking joy. Because he obviously was not making any trips to Amazon.com to get it for himself.
Was it signed? Was there a message?
Yes, there was a lovely message in front.
To Gladys. And then I crossed that out and wrote, Sophia, Dear Paul.
My little Sicilian friend. And I am reading it currently. I'm up to the point where we've entered lockdown phase.
Oh, fun. So it's interesting. Listen, we don't have to go on and on about it. Okay. But I do find it interesting, even just taking myself out of the equation. We know each other for many years.
Yes.
And I don't think I've ever had a friend who's written a memoir. So you must have learned some new things about me.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. No, 100%. Definitely. I think particularly what I found most interesting was the relationship with your father. I don't think I knew the depth of that and how much that sort of, what do I say? Yeah. Not affected you, but.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that I hear from daddy most issues. People. It's not surprising that most people are very, that they're connected to those stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all, for the same reason that I think we all kind of connected in the same way, you know, on Trump.
Oh, yeah,
because
exactly.
he unearthed all of these father issues that most of us have. Maybe the later generations, I know I'm much younger than you, but maybe the later generations won't have these issues.
Yeah, I don't think so now since it's a little more mainstream.
Right.
You know, but I definitely identified with that as well. And I saw your comparison with Trump, which I also found very interesting too. But no, there was so much of it that I also just found fun. Like you playing Snow White in your backyard was just, I wish there was a video of that. Is there a video?
There is a video.
There is not.
Well, clearly you haven't watched the CBS Sunday Morning Profile on me. And now this is our next beef.
I actually did watch that.
Well, you missed the best part. Because, they showed a piece of me in the backyard.
For anyone listening, we'll tag that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So you can all watch it.
Yeah, we need to see.
Yeah, you can go to YouTube and see little clips of it.
But I know this is not about me and no one really cares, but one thing I have to tell you.
Please.
Similarly, when I was in first grade for show and tell, the soundtrack of The Wiz, starring Miss Stephanie Mills, the only one who should ever play Dorothy, came out.
Sorry, Diana Ross. Don't try to book her now.
I know. Oh, right. Sorry. I'm going to be offending all these. Anyway.
Yeah.
I was given this when I was 7 years old. And as a gay boy, it absolutely thrilled me. And I decided for show and tell that we were going to perform Ease On Down the Road. And I chose three of my classmates, fellas, to play the Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And I took the role of Miss Stephanie
Naturally.
Mills.
Naturally.
So, Randy.
Well, is that really so surprising that we were both big queens and still are? We would still play Stephanie Mills.
Oh, let's do it right now.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I get to be Dorothy, though.
The Wiz, one of my favorite musicals, just celebrated an anniversary.
They did.
What was it, 35 years or something
like that? Something like that,
I love that show. Now, you know, in high school, this is wildly problematic, so don't try to pull up a video of this. But as I think a lot of people, we did The Wiz in my stupid high school, and it was an all-white cast, and it's like, to think about it now, it's like absolutely insane, and I played The Wiz.
You played The Wiz?
Yeah. I mean, I was fabulous.
I'm sure you are. That's a great part.
But what nerve have I? Did they?
Well, we did. I did The Wizard of Oz, which was probably more appropriate.
That's what we
my
probably
senior year, and I played the Scarecrow.
But The Wiz, just some of the best music ever.
Oh, yes. And Stephanie Mills' performance is one of my favorites.
Well, one of our other favorite musicals that we bonded over, because we are the gays of life, is Funny Girl, which we still have not yet seen.
Yeah, for some reason, I'm kind of putting that.
And maybe why? Because I have to pay for the tickets. That's why. Say it. Go on.
Well, there is some truth in that. But no, I've been saying.
Said with no irony.
There is some truth in that. Okay.
Well, yes, that is true. You do pay for the tickets.
Yes, this is true. You do pay for everything. Well, you are the celebrity, darling. I'm just a little lowly Sicilian friend.
I'm not a big enough celebrity to fund all of your needs.
We haven't seen that show.
Yeah, we haven't.
And they just announced.
It's going on national tour. Mm-hmm.
Starring you.
Starring me.
Get ready.
You're here. No, they don't know yet.
But I'm excited. But we know who we have on today, speaking of Funny Girl, is the fabulous Jane Lynch, who, of course, starred as Rosie Bryce, the mother, in this production.
Yes.
I can't believe you know the first name of that character.
Rosie Bryce?
Oh, my God.
Because it's Mrs. Bryce in every, credit.
Well, there's a lyric in the song. Clearly, you are not a gay man. How dare you? Turn in your card.
Clearly.
What is it? Who taught her everything she knows? Which Jane will hopefully sing for us today. And there's a lyric about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about Jane is that she bonded with her mother over funny girl. Much in the way I did.
Which I read in your book.
Thank you. Playing with Myself, now available wherever books are sold. And she said that it was sort of a bittersweet thing because whenever she would achieve any success in life, her mother would leave her voicemails and sing, "Who taught her everything she knows?" You know, anytime like Jane got a part or something, because that was their thing. So I'm going to ask her about that.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
Who do you think they're going to cast in the national tour?
Probably me.
Maybe Miss Julie Benko, the understudy.
I would imagine she's getting raves.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, anyway. Lots to talk about with Jane Lynch, Funny Girl included, and I think we should get to it, Paul.
Okay, let's do it. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back right after this.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. Let's answer the phone.
Pick up.
Hi, Randy. This is Sharon from Queens. I adored your book and want to know how you think your dad would have adapted to your current level of success and fame. Do you think he would be suggesting song parody ideas or maybe insist on a collaboration like you did with Patti LuPone, which is one of my personal favorites of all your videos? Do you think he might have moved past his jealousy and enjoyed being the father of the famous and fabulous Randy Rainbow? Or would he be selling stories about you like Meghan Markle's father did to the press? Thanks.
Kicking off with daddy issue questions, let's just get right into it. Just bringing up a lot of shit for me, but that's fine. I think he probably would have sued me for libel and slander. And probably it would have been a Meghan Markle situation, I'm sorry to say. Although, I don't know. I'd like to say that maybe he would have matured a bit, but I think probably it wouldn't have been pretty. Thanks for your question.
Hi, Randy. It's Ashley from Alabama. I love your work so much, and you are so talented and fun. I can't wait to see your show on the Broadway cruise this spring. You have so many different types of work, your shows, your videos, your albums, your book, and now your fabulous podcast. I was wondering, which type of work do you enjoy the most? Looking so forward to the cruise. Thank you.
Thanks, Ashley. Thank you for your question. I'm excited about the Broadway cruise. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think there are still some tickets available, perhaps. Just Google Broadway cruise. I get different things from all different parts of my career. I love making my videos. I would say that's still probably the most creatively fulfilling because it allows me to really do everything to the height of my creative desires. And so I get to write and record and act and edit, which I actually love to do. But then it's nice to come in to the Randy Rainbow podcast and just kind of let my guard down and chat a little bit. And it's great going on tour because it's lovely to be in an actual room with actual people and feel that energy coming back at me because it can be very isolating, as I've said, just doing it all in a room. So I just love it all. I love it all, damn it.
My name's Dave. I was wondering if you had ever thought about looking into the catalog of Tom Lehrer, fellow Sondheim fan and wonderful person. So, and a wonderful satirist like you. He's a little before your time in the 60s, but he did three albums of some really hysterical stuff back in the days. And I'm wondering if you had any interest in revitalizing some of his content.
I am embarrassed to say that before I started doing this job, I did not know who Tom Lehrer was. A lot of people have come to me through the years and asked if he was an inspiration or an influence. And truthfully, not directly, at least, I did not and still, unfortunately, am not very familiar with his work. However, a fan just sent me three of his albums. Maybe those are the three that you're referring to. So I literally just got that as a gift last week. And so I plan on diving in and I'll keep you posted. But how dare you say it was slightly before my time, the 1960s, you son of a bitch. If you would like to leave me a message, go to my show notes, click on the link, ask me a question, leave me a comment, and we'll talk about it.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast, Variety Show.
And now a word from our sponsor. Hello, friends. Randy Rainbow here, your favorite comedian, actor, and celebrity personality. And I'm here to tell you that if you missed out on the Donald Trump digital NFT trading cards, you're about to get a second chance. Introducing, for a limited time only, Donald Trump Jr. NFT digital trading cards. Starting at just $79.99, you can get these gorgeously atrocious depictions of America's favorite man baby, Don Jr., at his Don Jr.-est. You can see the hunk posing in front of a hunted down and currently extinct northern white rhino, doing a line of cocaine off an outback steakhouse bathroom floor, or having his beard painted back on by his current gold digger, Gavin Newsom's ex-wife. But what exactly is an NFT, you ask? Great question. NFT stands for Savvy Digital Investor, and it's a way to invest money into a digital NFT that you can then use to guarantee peace of mind that your NFT is an asset that you invested in for you. It's that easy. Each timeless trading card has been personally handpicked from the very tiny hands of Donnie J. Got an unemployable movie-loving mutant in your life? How about Don Jr. as the lovable hero Biff in Back to the Future? Or your very own NFT featuring Don Jr. as Calvin Candy, the daring protagonist from Django Unchained, originally performed by Leo DiCaprio. Don't be the only one besides his dad who ignores the opportunity to appreciate Don Trump Jr. in all his copyright violation NFT glory. The first 1,000 orders will also receive a one-of-a-kind finger painting of a dinosaur on loose-leaf notebook paper created by none other than Eric Trump himself. Get your Don Jr. NFT trading cards today!
That was really a kick, but enough of that skit. Time to drop all the shit now. Shit. I think I'm fabulous, Kiki. With someone I love would be best. It's time for a guest.
My guest today is an Emmy Award-winning actor, comedian, host, and author. She's one of the most celebrated and recognizable talents around, with a body of work ranging from her role in the hit series Glee to outrageously funny characters in such Christopher Guest films as Best in Show and A Mighty Wind. Please help me welcome the sensational Jane Lynch.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Jane.
Look at your set.
Look at this.
You
We're not kidding
beautiful.
Around. Thank
no,
you,
you're
sweetheart.
Not.
As do you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy to see you and talk to you. Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Is that Joan Rivers on your shirt?
It's Joan Rivers giving the middle finger.
God bless her. I feel it from the grave.
Was she someone for you? Was she a special?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was a special one. And I met her a few times. And you worked for her, didn't you?
No.
You're
confusing me with some other gay.
No. You didn't work with her. But you know who did? George Hahn.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. He did her social media for years.
Oh, who knew?
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, it's funny. That was going to be my first question to you, because you are an inspiration to so many. I was going to ask you, who was it? Other than Joan, who was it for you? Who were the people who really inspired you? Other than
me? Okay. Are we recording? Do I answer
yeah.
this sincerely?
Yeah, we're on. We're doing
oh,
it.
Oh, we're on.
We did the intro before you got here, because to just start a conversation like we're sitting in your living room without our pants
Instead
on.
Like we do. Hi, we're here with Jane Lynch, and now Jane. No, good. I like this. No,
Fuck
no
that.
Ceremony.
Absolutely not.
Let me think who, Joan for sure. Joan Rivers was, I remember her back when she was doing the Johnny Carson show. And I always thought she was so pretty too. I didn't understand why she kept talking about herself as ugly. And now I know that that's kind of what you had to do back then. You had to say, in order to be a female comic, you had to talk about how you couldn't get a boyfriend. You know, and Phyllis Diller did that as well. Yeah, I'm so ugly. And she wasn't that ugly. In fact, I don't think she was ugly at all.
Yeah, Joan herself actually would talk about how when you saw Phyllis Diller off stage, she was always, these fabulous suits and done up to the nines.
Yeah.
But yeah, you had to, in order to be taken seriously as a comedian.
Yeah, exact comedian with the two N's and the E.
That was the gimmick. You had to be, I'm unfuckable. Ha, ha, ha.
Exactly. Ha, ha, ha. And that was the way that they were able to break into this very male field. And who else? Like Toadie Fields, I'm fat, and I played that character on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, because it was back in those days that you had to have that gimmick, and Midge Maisel wouldn't do that. That whole, I can't get a boyfriend. She wanted to be an observational comic. And my thing with her, Sophie Lennon's thing with her is, well, what's your gimmick? And she said, I don't really have a gimmick. And that pissed Sophie off because she had to have a gimmick and she would rather not have had a gimmick.
Right. So it was comedians for you. Because I know you're,
not
I know
so
you're
much.
A, yeah. Well, was it TV or a theater? Because I know you're a musical TV. Theater nerd like I am, of course.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, so, grew up on the musicals. But for me, it was television. In fact, one of the reasons I can't watch television anymore, I think, is because I did my share when I was a kid. I mean, I watched it all day long into like the middle of the night. My mother would come downstairs and go, what are you doing up? And I'm watching some movie from, you know, 1958. I loved Carol Burnett. And in fact, I ran into her on the street last night.
We you did last night?
Town. Yeah, last night. Yeah. She was just leaving a restaurant. You know, we live in the same little town. And she was just leaving the restaurant and with her husband. And we had a nice chat. And she's going to be 90.
I know. Jane, I'm going to her birthday party.
Oh, good.
Are you going to be there? I'm going to see
gonna
you there.
I'm going to be there. Yeah, you're going to see me there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she, you know, that show, you're too young to have seen it first run.
Yes, that's right. You're too young for everything.
You're too young. You were a fetus through all of this.
Yeah.
You weren't even a twinkle in your mother's eye at this point.
Well.
But I watched the Carol Burnett show, and this was pre, you know, recording things on videotape. And my brother and I would record it on my dad's hand recorder that he used for dictation. So we would listen to it over and over again on this tiny little recorder, the scenes, and we would laugh and we would act them out. And yeah, I also loved that she was part of an ensemble. I always wanted to be a part of a team, of a group. And I never wanted to be out there alone. I wanted to make funny with people. So when I got into Second City, that was, even though I didn't know that's what I wanted to do, I kind of stumbled into it and I loved it.
Into Second City. How did you wind up in Second City?
Well, I had just gotten out of graduate school where I studied acting, and I was a classically trained actor. And I went back to Chicago, where I'm from, that has a really thriving non-equity theater, which means theaters that don't pay you. And you do for, you know, love. And I had auditions, you know, all the time. And you would always audition for the paying theaters like the Goodman and the Steppenwolf theaters and the Second Cities, hoping, you know, that you can get a paying gig. And Second City, I sent my resume in and they said, yeah, come on in and audition with a bunch of other people. And I was scared to death. I don't know anything about improvisation. It scares me. And I guess I did well. And I was chosen. They choose two women for each group, three guys and two women, or four guys and two women. And I was chosen, and it baffled me. I did not know why I was chosen, but I loved it. And what I loved most about it was there was no improvisation. When you do the touring company, it's set scenes. You go there with a show and you do a little improv at the end, but it's basically you're doing tried and true scenes from the history of Second City. You're not creating your own stuff. So, and I love that. I just love that.
That's funny. People probably consider you an improv person.
Because of the Christopher Guest stuff.
Yeah. Did you become an improv person, or do you still consider yourself a scripted?
That's different than, I mean, it's improv, but it's a different kind of improv than Second City stuff, which is, you know, get to the laugh. It's very masculine. It's almost like, let's get to the orgasm. Let's get to the laugh, 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 laugh. Whereas with the Christopher Guest stuff, because he films it too, you're allowed and encouraged to meander and find your way through the scene. And, you know, Chris doesn't like, you know, the going for the joke. He likes human beings and human behavior and people who have kind of an insight on that, on the ironies of, you know, how human beings can be. And he loves that world of, you know, those very small kind of microcosms of worlds that are trying to make something of themselves, like the small town theater that thinks they're going to go to Broadway on Waiting for Guffman, and the folk music folk who, you know, never get the respect in the mainstream world, kind of coming together for a big concert that they hope will revive all of their careers. So he loves that striving. And he likes the more kind of feminine kind of improv where you see what happens. And then he can edit it together. But he would rather you know, the takes go forever. there was like the first when I did Best in Show, and Jennifer Coolidge and I were just like, when is he going to yell cut? Because I got nothing. So you just keep going.
Is there a lot of footage of that? Has there been released footage?
There was deleted scenes. You know, there are some deleted scenes.
I want hours, though. I want all of the hours.
Well, that's funny. In Waiting for Guffman, they did a whole musical number that never ended up in the movie, and it was called This Bulging River. And it was hilarious. It was so good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Those movies are so, you're part of so many iconic things. What would you say you're most recognized for? Is it Glee? Is it the Christopher Guest stuff still? Or what?
Probably. Randy, it really depends on the person. Who comes up to me. If it's a young man, well, not even young man anymore now because that happened in 2008, but like young guys loved Role Models. And people here in my little town just outside of Santa Barbara, they'll recognize me from Maisel or the Julia Child movie, Julie and Julia, which I didn't have a big part in, but was such an impactful movie for a lot of people, especially foodies who loved Julia Child. And she's from this town that I'm living in.
Julia Child is?
She lived there. Yeah, she lived there.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a little something about that later, but that movie was impactful to me too. Because that was right at the time when I was starting a blog. Like everyone had a blog at that time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But from that perspective, it was
she
huge.
She passed away, that girl.
She just passed away, Julie Powell. She was 49 years old.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Devastating. And we kind of connected on social media a few times. Isn't it weird like when people die now, it's like I have to remind myself, like, why am I so affected by that? Because I think I know them. I don't really know them, but I do. You do have a connection to people that you normally wouldn't. And therefore, when people pass on, should they, like in a case like this, I'm wildly impacted by it.
Yeah. And also it's a reminder of our own mortality.
Constantly.
We're going to die.
Oh, my God. Jane. All right. That's
a crazy thing.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. But you were so fabulous in that movie. Yeah, it was a small part, but it really was memorable.
It was.
What was that like for you and working with Meryl Streep and all that? Come on.
Well, I met Nora Ephron at the opening of A Mighty Wind. And she was lovely. And she knew some people that I knew. And a bunch of us went out for brunch one morning. And she said, I want to talk to you about something because you're the tallest actress I know. And she said, I'm working on something now, but you're going to hear from me. And so I was in New York doing something else. And she said, can you meet me for breakfast? And I said, yeah. And she said, I'm doing the Julia Child thing and I want you to play her sister. And it's very important to me because first of all, she's tall. But she said, because she was a sister, she had three sisters, Nora did, and those relationships were so precious to her, especially her Delia, her younger sister. And she said, I just want to get this right. And so you'll be Meryl Streep's sister. Are you up for that? I said, oh, my God. I was a little nervous. And she said, you'll get a free trip to Paris. And I said, well, that's fine, but I would have done it anyway. But then, of course, I did not get that free trip to Paris because there are no railway stations in Paris that look like they're from the 40s anymore or the 50s. So we had to do it at Hoboken.
Oh, really? They could from Paris to Hoboken? They couldn't find a happy medium?
But the railway station they had just restored back to its 1920s glory. And it didn't have Pepsi advertising or, Nike or anything like they do in Paris now. So anyway, I got a free trip to Hoboken. I was nervous. I was really nervous. I was nervous to work with her. And,
had you met her before? Was this the first time meeting Meryl?
No, it was the first time. Julia Child, I had never seen any, footage of the sister, but Julia Child was not only a huge person, she was like 6'2". Ooh, she had all of the center. She was exuberant. And in fact, in Paris, she like blew the people away. You know, they're so refined and they don't like big displays but because she was so genuine and she was so fascinated with food and tastes and textures and butter and that they loved her. They just adored her. And I guess they embraced her sister the same way. So I assumed that she had that level of energy as well. So when I worked on it by myself, it was exuberant and just grabbing life and just everything was exciting. So I was rather large, not only in my person, but in how I was going to play it. And Nora had me come the day before I started work and said, I want you to see the world that Meryl is creating, you know, the how big her character is, the energy and everything. I said, okay, great. So I was watching the monitor and I was like, we're going to be fine. We're going to be, I'm going to be okay.
Wow.
And so, you know, I got in there and just, oh, it was a joy because I'm such a big fan of hers. And I, you know, you don't want to fan out with, when you're working with somebody, you just want to meet them as a fellow actor. So I had to do some, you know, deep breathing and just show up and go, this is a job and this is a person who I'm working with. And immediately we had to create a very intimate, physically intimate relationship too. We were very touchy with each other. So we dove in, you know, right away. It was one of those things you either do it or you don't.
Are you good at that? Are you good at sort of, you know, elevating over yourself? Like that's what I do. I sort of yeah. leave my body in those moments.
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Do you have to, do exercises, actual like breathing exercises?
Well, you know, the thing, you just have to find what's important to focus on, which is the world of the scene and your lines and who the person is to you. And when you're doing that, you know, you lose the fear. Now I would imagine, cause you're, you went from, you know, kind of being this guy who did that funny Mel Gibson thing, which just, I remember seeing that made me laugh so hard.
You remember my golden oldies?
Your golden oldies. Oh. And then all of a sudden you just rightfully so just exploded during the Trump thing with those brilliant musical takes and the production quality and everything. And you did that in your apartment, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, see, and it was weird for me because I never left my backyard, so to speak. I stayed from the Mel Gibson days. It did explode, but I never left my house.
Right, exactly. You
know? But then I would go and start touring and Jane Lynch would be in the audience. And it was like fucking crazy.
And then the people retweeting you even before that. I mean, you had the biggest stars in the world retweeting you.
Nuts. Well, that was the trippiest thing. But it's weird because I'm not on a set like you were with Meryl, for instance. I'm still in my living room. I'm still in my fucking living room.
But you're in a nicer living room.
It's
now,
a slightly bigger living room. Thank God. Yeah. But but you were one of the first people to come out when I first started touring, and that really it made me a little nauseous. I don't like when my idols are in the audience. I love seeing you after, but it makes me nauseous physically. Do you have the same thing?
Yes. I have a rule. I don't want to know.
Me too.
You can't
tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't tell me, you know, we're going to invite so-and-so. Well, don't tell me when they come. I don't want to know. And, you know, I just did Funny Girl on Broadway. And
I know. That's my next question.
Yes, you know. And I do these cabaret shows all around the country with Kate Flannery. And she loves that. She's like, hey, we're going to get so-and-so to come and blah, blah, blah. And she knows better than to tell me who's out there. But we had a thing at, and I think this goes for, I would imagine most theater folk are this way. We don't talk about reviews. We don't talk about word on the street. We don't talk about who's in the audience unless you want to know. But for the most part, like I remember the stage manager going, we don't do that. There are too many people who don't want to know. So I definitely don't, because it will affect me. It will affect my performance. And then I'm not giving my best.
Yeah, that's my worst nightmare. No, my first tour manager was a personal friend, and he was like Kate, and he would get all jazzed up. I guess who's here? Guess who's here? Shut the fuck up! Do not tell me, or I will leave.
Yeah.
I would tell it.
And so, now, like, you had to know some people were in the audience because you invite, or maybe did you know the night we were there?
I did. I did know. I did know ahead of time.
You don't need.
But I didn't like. There were a lot of people in the audience that night, but I don't like. I was so honored and thrilled that you came. But again, diarrhea.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. And you were in LA, so I'm sure there were a lot of. It was maybe to the point where you were almost numb knowing who was out there.
Right. Because then
you were great. You could never tell that you had any.
I'm glad. Well, Funny Girl.
Yeah.
Funny. I know. Now, so did it start with, was
I
that
love that you sang that one.
That's not in the, I still haven't seen the show. And I was on tour when
Julie
you did
Stein
it. I could kill
wrote
myself.
That for
the movie.
For Nick. And they didn't use it in the Broadway production, the first production with Barber. I know, and oh, I've got some insight on that. I'll tell you some scuttlebutt about that time. But okay, anyway, that was written by Julie Stein because he wanted to give Nick more to do, but then they hired Sidney Chaplin, who doesn't really sing. So they cut that out. But Ramin, of course, can sing, so they put it in. But
yeah. Oh, so he sings it in the show.
Okay. Yeah, he does, yeah. Yeah.
So I know that you had that you bonded with your mom over that, I've heard.
Yes.
Over Funny Girl. I share that with you. Yeah.
Oh, your mom, and your real name is Rainbow too. So your mother's name is Rainbow too.
Yeah. But I want you to tell about your mom, but my mother too. I walked into the living room one morning when I was like 12 years old and my mother said, Funny Girl was on TV last night. I taped it and then I ordered the CD because you're going to want the soundtrack after you watch the movie. And I was like, okay, I was gay by noon the next day.
Yeah.
This was her agenda, her gay agenda.
Bring it out, honey. And you're going to bring it out through this.
And I've never been the same since. So Funny Girl was huge for me. And that was, you know, Barbara then became my religion. How did it start for you and your mom?
Well, my mother played musicals all the time. Man of La Mancha, My Fair Lady, King and I, Funny Girl. Funny Girl was her favorite, and it was my favorite as well. And we would, you know, anytime I got a job in show business, she would go, who taught her everything she knows? And we just had such a great time together with that. We didn't bond on very much. We weren't, we didn't have much in common, but we had this, which was great. And it was enough for a relationship. So yeah, I loved hearing it.
She was a musical theater lover from—
Lover. Yeah, yeah, and she liked to sing. You know, she wasn't professional or anything, but she was my mom on the south side of Chicago in the 60s. And my dad, she and my dad sang together. And and The Music Man was a big one. And they would do Light a Rose together. My father was a wonderful harmonizer. And he had a beautiful kind of, he could have that. He had a very much like a Bing Crosby voice. He actually had a great talent, I thought. He could do that kind of tenor thing that Bing Crosby. As we would do, and then he can get real low. So he had a really great ear for music, and my mother would sing the melody, and they would sit around the kitchen table with their cocktails and sing Music Man, which I love, one of my favorite musicals in the world.
Mine too. That's the other thing. My mother would put me to sleep with Music Man and Oklahoma every night.
Night, my someone.
Yeah. Jane, all I wanted was to be Shirley Jones. That was my whole life's mission.
And I wanted to be Robert Preston.
See? Okay, that's the next revival they got to do. Called Jordan Roth. Were your parents funny?
Yes. Yeah, but not, you know, they were fun. My mom was inadvertently funny. She's a little bit spacey. She was a very slack jaw. She didn't realize how funny she was. And my dad was corny, like Kansas in August. He was a very... just corny dad stuff. And he thought he was hilarious. And we were embarrassed. And then we became, you know, admirous of it. We just loved it. Admirous isn't a word, but I'm just making it up.
It could have been.
If
you hadn't told me, I wouldn't have.
On some dimension, it is a word.
Okay, so the Funny Girl, of course, happened. But before Funny Girl, you make your Broadway debut in what I did see, Annie.
Yeah.
Now, what was it like to finally be on Broadway
for you?
It was
great. It was wonderful. At that time, I was married, and it wasn't a very good one, marriage. And I said no to the offer at first. And I won't go into why, but let's just say it wasn't a great marriage.
Okay.
And I said no to the offer. And then it fell apart, the marriage. And I called my agent and I said, I want to do it. Is it too late? She said, no, I held off on saying no. So, So I was like, oh, I'm doing it. I was so excited. I felt like such an, you know, like I was being rewarded for having, you know, kind of made a really hard decision. And so it was a joy. It was a joy to step in. I was uber prepared, as I am for everything. I watched the video over and over and over. And I knew I had to rehearse in LA. And it was happening in New York. So my put-in rehearsal was, you know, I was really nervous, but it worked. And I just enjoyed it so much.
You were phenomenal. You were so good.
Oh, thank you, honey.
Yeah. And then of course, Funny Girl. So what is it like to do that? And first of all, was that the hardest thing not to be able to share that with your mom?
Yeah.
Not to bring the party down, but I imagine it must have been.
Yeah. Yes and no, Randy, because I have like a stronger relationship with my mother now that she's gone than I did when she was
here. It's funny. Sarah Silverman just said the same thing to us on our last episode.
Really?
Or a couple episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry, yeah. Mom. I'm not getting any ideas, but yes.
And you will too, Mrs. Rainbow. Oh, yeah, it's she's so present for me. Like sometimes when my family is in town and we were going out for dinner, in my mind she was there. It's like a shock to me to go, oh, she wasn't there. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if she's here. So obviously something's going on. She's sending some love or something. But yeah, it's like she knows. She knows. And I was, you know, in that I got to sing that song, Who Taught Her Everything She Knows. And yeah, it was really fun. I loved, it's the actor's life for me. It really is. I love those 8 shows a week. I was exhausted, but in such a delightful way. And yeah, I just loved it. I'd do it again, you know, but I would, of course, want it to be something that I would want to do. I wouldn't do that sort of thing for something that I wasn't like real, you know. Sometimes I'll do a television thing. It's like, all right, I'll do it. And then you're done in an hour or you're done in a day. But this, you know, you have to really want to do it.
Oh, it's a commitment. It's a life changer.
Yeah.
Would you like to originate something on Broadway? Or do you like, I mean, it's a thrill for a musical theater nerd to step into something like Funny Girl, but would you want to originate?
Probably not.
Okay.
I'm such an old lady and such a traditionalist. First of all, I'm lazy. Second of all, I don't like anything new. I like Rodgers and Hammerstein.
I share this with you. I'm exactly.
I love Julie Stein. Yeah, yes. Yeah. The traditional American musical, like the Oklahoma and that kind of
stuff. I'm a curmudgeon and I'm very snobby when it comes to new things.
And I'm a traditionalist with the productions too. I think why do you want to reinterpret Oklahoma and make it something it's not?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get in trouble. I was watching an interview and I heard you say that you never set goals.
Yeah.
Does that struck a chord with me because I'm the same way. Does that mean professionally, personally, always?
Everything. Everything.
How do you mean?
Well, sometimes, you know, when people say you got to have goals, I remember when I was younger and I'd go, oh, okay, I have to have goals. And all I know is when I would try to set a goal, it would just create such anxiety and such fear of failure that I thought, nah, let's just let that go. So I never really did it. And there's kind of a meme in our society now. It's cultural. It's, you know, you have to set your sights on something. And I set my sights on something that it's a real organic thing. Like, you know, I don't so much anymore because I don't know why. But when I was younger, I knew I wanted to be on TV. I didn't know how that was going to look. I knew I wanted to be on stage. And I didn't know how that was going to look. And I'm glad that I don't, because I think that setting those types of goals and getting like very specific with what you want can make you like not see what's right in front of you. You know, maybe there's something you're going this way and there's something over here.
Right.
But it goes by you. Or you find yourself in something, you go, oh, why? Because you didn't set out to be this, did you? What you're doing
now?
No,
but like you, I just sort of, I manifested it absolutely in some broad way. I did not, I didn't come to New York like all my friends and start pounding the pavement and auditioning like you're supposed to. I you know, I kind of hibernated for a decade almost and turn, you know, had to grow into a person. But I always knew that this is what I love. There's a fire in me to do this, to something. And then sure enough, but how would I have, especially as a kid, manifested the way it was going to happen? Really specific.
And I think we do kids a disservice by saying that, and everybody a disservice. And also, who's choosing those goals? It's the part of us that doesn't know shit, you know. Right. Or it's the part of us that is immature and desirous and angsting for something, and as opposed to that part of us that's wise and trusting and has, you know, faith in our life flowing the way it's supposed to flow. You know, I used to struggle about this. I don't so much anymore. I don't need an answer. Is there free will or is there not free will? You know, I kind of proceed as if I have free will, but I don't think we do. I think we kind of fall into things and we give ourselves more credit than we deserve.
You think there's a divine sort of roadmap?
Yeah, I think there's a trajectory to each of us.
I do too.
And you know, for some people it's harder. It's much harder and doesn't seem fair. And for some of us, it seems blessed, But who's to say, you know, who's to say?
So, and but you've gone on to have this iconic career. So what do you say to, like, you know, youngsters who ask you for advice? How do you, how do you advise them?
I'd like to hear what you say too. I say
get out of the business immediately.
Yeah. I just say, I don't know that. I'm more into focusing on the craft itself. Focusing on what's right in front of me. Like, I'm going back to my alma mater, Illinois State University, for 3 weeks, and I'm going to do a class about taking a play apart. I'm going to take an iconic American comedy, maybe something Neil Simon, and let's take it apart as an actor. Let's take it apart, which means you also have to be kind of a, you have to be able to analyze a play as well. But because I find that, especially in this society, I'm going to sound like ancient person right now. We've put the cart before the horse. We want fame and we want fortune. We want to be known for something instead of learning our craft, learning how to, like, you learned how to piece together this stuff because you had a desire, not you didn't have a desire to become Randy Rainbow internet sensation that everybody's, you know, creaming over, who's became this, like, you know, iconic, mind-blowing thing that you do, and you do something just amazing. But that's because you took all these little pieces, and it's creativity, and it's also, like, technical. And doing any kind of art is that.
That's what I tell people, because I didn't know what I was doing. All I did was just follow my passion. This is just the sum of all of those parts of me.
Right.
That eventually met some specific time, and I was able to kind of put them to use in a way that other people found beneficial or, you know, entertaining.
Enjoyable.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just me having a good time.
You're having a good time, and you're operating from the height of your creativity, and you're not putting the cart before the horse saying, I want to become this thing. And when you look back, I think we have this tendency because we love stories. Humans love stories. And I say that like I'm above being a human. You know, I love stories too. But we look back and people say, how did it happen? And you go, well, I guess I could make this. I could tell you this story. This happened, that happened, and that happened. But tomorrow I can tell you another story. Because who's to say how any of this happens? I think as human beings, we want to know how to do it. How do I get from here to there? And there is nothing. There is no trajectory or recipe that puts you on that trajectory. You have to really just stay right in the moment and what's in front of me. What is right here in front of me?
That's the way to do it. All right. Yep. I'm running out of time with you, but I have to get to a few things here.
We've just started.
Okay, good. We'll be here another 2 hours. I'm sorry, everybody. I put a few people on my list that I wanted you to just kind of do like a speed round. The people that you've worked with. We've already spoken about many of them. All right, but Jennifer Coolidge is having this renaissance now. Renaissance.
Yeah, the renaissance.
What do you think of that? What was it like to work with her?
I think the world had to catch up with her. I think she kind of came out, burst out of the gates, you know, in Best in Show. People are like, who is that woman?
Right.
And we had a blast doing Best in Show because it was our first Christopher Guest experience. And we were both very nervous. And we shot it in Vancouver and we hung out together. You know, it rains a lot in Vancouver. And we walked in the rain and we walked through Stanley Park and we talked about our character and we laughed a lot. We had so much fun. I became kind of her caretaker. And if you hang out with Jennifer, you kind of have to be her caretaker. we would go out and she would realize, oh, I left my wallet in that Thai restaurant, and I would go, and it's pouring out. And she goes, oh, I'm not good. I go, no, I'll go get it. I'll go get it. Or we'll go out in the cold and she doesn't have a coat or an umbrella with her. So I would get that for her. She's just like on another dimension.
But would you say in the way that we know her through her sort of characters, is it that similar kind of?
Yeah,
oh, she is. She's okay.
She is that, but she's really smart, and you have to be smart to be able to do that, to look that stupid. Sometimes she plays like stupid, but she's stupid like a fox. She's so smart. She gets human nature, and I believe that the world had to catch up with her. So that's why I think it's happening in a big way, and she kind of destiny and her talent kind of met.
Yeah.
With this show, White Lotus.
Steve Martin, and Martin Short.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, both of them. To be in the presence of both of them is pretty amazing. But Martin Short is one of the funniest people just sitting there in his chair that I've ever met. And he is so open-hearted and positive. And Steve is quieter.
Yeah.
Steve is quieter and slower to get to know, but he's available for it, you know. But yeah, it was just a real, it was a real joy. They're both so great. And we were, you know how when you work in the morning and then you have lunch and you have a big lunch and when you come back, you can't remember anything anymore. Have you ever experienced that? Like on set, you shouldn't eat big lunch is what I've learned because, and I learned this doing Glee. Because I'd be great in the morning and then we're shooting the same scene at lunch and maybe the camera's on me now. I can't remember a thing because I've carbo-loaded at lunch and my brain is dead. It's always better to have a little lunch and take a little nap. So anyway, Martin came back from lunch and he was out of his mind in the most delightful way. And we were doing his coverage. And so this is after lunch. I'm assuming he had a big lunch. And he couldn't remember anything. So he's just making things up. And it was so brilliant that I had to turn around. I couldn't even look at him because he was saying something to me. So I had to turn around because I was just laughing so hard. He was so, so hilarious and so open-minded and so just in the moment. Yeah, just love him.
He is so generous. He gave me his email address in the first 5 minutes and said, "Really?
Have you been abusing it?
I try not to.
Hey, Marty, what's up? Can I call you Marty?
That was the opening line of my first email to him. Can I call you Marty? I'm sure no one's ever said that to him. I'm a fucking loser. Also, Kate Flannery, who you perform Kate with, Flannery. Your dear friend. Mm-hmm. Did you start doing shows together at 54 Below?
We knew each other way before that, but that was our first cabaret show together.
Because I think before I was a big shot, I was working for the Broadway site, Broadway World, and I would cover these events and these press events. And I think that I interviewed you and Kate when you did your first show at 54 Below.
You think you don't remember?
I think I'm sure I did. Well, I don't know if it was it must have been the first one.
We mustn't have been memorable.
No, you, of course, were memorable, but I didn't know if it was the first, but now that I think about it, that was the first show you did together.
That was the first show we did of this particular iteration, but I've known Kate since
100 years.
Yeah, 100 years, 110 years we've been doing this since like the 80s, the late 80s, we've been singing together.
And why do you love working with her?
Because she's one of the most fun, and she's a great singer, and she can sing harmony. And we both have Irish dads, and we both grew up singing with our dads. And her dad is still with us. He's like 96, sharp as a tack. Old Tom, we love you. And so we come from the same like background. We bonded right away. And then when we started singing together, because we both love the Andrews sisters and the Barry sisters. Are you aware of the Barry sisters? They used to sing in Yiddish.
Oh, by Mir Bestushain?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they did the original. Then the Andrews sisters did there. So we do the by Mir Bestushain that the Barry sisters did.
Okay.
By Mir Bestushain. We do it in Yiddish. Oh, two little Irish Catholic girls.
Isn't that funny? Well, yeah. you do it better than I do, and I'm a full Jew.
How we met way back when. And 54 Below was the first time we did a cabaret show together, and we've been touring with that show since 2014.
You're so great together. You mentioned Glee. On Glee, your character had a catchphrase, and that's how Sue sees it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna wind down now with a little game.
Okay.
That's how Jane sees it. And I'm just going to throw out some topics. Tell me what you think. Okay. Social media, maybe Twitter specifically, which is where we first met.
It's the dark and the light. It's the hellscape and the heaven at the same time.
You think Twitter specifically or?
Yeah.
I think it's just so awful.
It's pretty bad. But also you're on Twitter. That's heaven on earth everywhere. The stuff that you do. And I never laughed so hard as some of the stuff I've seen on Twitter, your stuff included. I have been moved to tears in a beautiful way. I've never seen better videos about dogs and cats. And there are some people who have really great takes on things. And then there's just such crap. And even from like the left, the whole woke side of it is, and you kind of have to be tribal. And you, if you say something, something just even that sniffs of not, you know, the party line, you get absolutely pulverized.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I've never experienced that.
Are you off? Are you off of Twitter? You're just...
I'm much less... I really like when I do my videos and I'm starting up again, I kind of... Good. My thing is just drop and go. You know, I don't engage as much.
Yeah.
I try to engage more. To make up for it, I do engage more like on Instagram and things, which for me is much more positive and happy.
It
Twitter,
is.
Everyone's really looking to be miserable on Twitter.
I know. Yeah. And they're looking for a fight. And there are a lot of people that just, you know, they like dangle this bait so you'll notice them. Like they love to do it with famous people. And there's so many people that take the bait. It's like, why are you talking to this person with four followers? Why?
But I did. I know. I used to do it all the time. And then my publicist was like, you can't fucking do that anymore. Because I would. Yeah. But sometimes I wanted to like, I can't, I don't have it in me to let just, to let it go. I lose sleep over some of this shit. Yeah.
So you're right to get off of it and know that about yourself. Absolutely. Good move.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's some political thing. I mean, Kevin McCarthy. Do you have any?
Just scum. I mean, he has no principles. He's an empty suit. I hope he is in for a hellish speakership and he won't last, but he has sold his soul to the devil. Do you think there's any way he's going to be able to control the Jim Jordans and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Matt Gaetzes?
No
way. Do you know, I just watched Matt Gaetz nominated Donald J. Trump, or as he said, Donald John Trump in this last round.
Donald Jessica Trump for a speaker. Yeah,
Donald Jessica for speaker. So
I didn't see
I got off. Got off when I saw that. But it's just a hellscape.
What about the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts? Yeah. What the hell is that? Like, how do we?
I think it's the lowest form of it. Well, Trump inspired it, and it's not all Trump. We inspired him. It's the lowest form of humanity now in the halls of power. These are like little babies. These are like little bullies in the schoolyard that would have been knocked over with one swoop. And now they have power. Like, look at Lauren Boebert when she talks on television. She's so excited to be such a bitch.
Yes. It's so true.
And so dumb.
But that goes back to social media, I think.
Yeah.
That's the only reason we have these people in our lives.
Right. Yeah.
It's because they were able to mobilize somehow and get a base thanks to social media.
And raised up. But they've been elected. They're elected by people who like this.
I don't understand.
That's the scary thing. Yeah.
I don't get it. Here's a lighter one. Brunch.
What do I think of brunch?
Is this too political? Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to opine on this. I don't want to get pummeled on Twitter. Okay.
How about standing ovations?
They don't mean anything anymore.
Okay.
Because people get a standing ovation for everything.
They do.
They used to mean something. And now if you don't get one, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That's a very, that's like an American thing. Mm-hmm. They don't do that like overseas.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. Well, they shouldn't. Not everything deserves a standing ovation. Not everything is fantastic and transcendent. It should be reserved for like when Barbara Streisand does Funny Girl in 1964. Look at you, just lost your breath when I said that.
I can't. Do you have any? Have you met her?
Oh, yes. I'm going to send you a picture. I went to one of her, I know of the two of us, I went to a luncheon at the some Beverly Hills hotel. Excuse and she me. Was doing a women's, you know, heart attack prevention thing that she, a program that she started because women's symptoms for heart attacks are completely different than men's. And God bless her. She, you know, raised a bunch of money for some awareness. And so I got to meet her and she was glorious. You know, she was kind of shy. Yes.
I love her as I love you. What's what's coming up next? What do you want to tell people? Anything? The floor is yours.
Nothing really.
Oh, good.
You know, Maisel is done. I think I'm going to do an only Murders in the Building again. I'll be going to New York to do that. But other than that, I direct the commercials for the Illinois Office of Tourism.
Oh, really?
And I think I'd rather direct. And I want to direct stage. That was something that doing Funny Girl inspired me.
Oh, that's great. Do. Any yeah. prospective projects?
No, nothing. No. Oh. No one's invited me. Yeah, I would love to.
Well, they will now. We have 9 listeners. Someone will hear this. I won't let you leave without signing a verbal contract that over the next 2 years, there's going to be lots of Randy Rainbow videos. And I've gotten a lot of people to agree to duet with me. You know, Patti LuPone has come to my home.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. That's right. That was brilliant.
Will you maybe one day collaborate on something with
me? One day?
Yes.
Any day.
You will? Okay.
That good. I would do in a heartbeat.
Okay. We're doing it.
Great.
Thank you, Jane Lynch. I love you and adore you.
I love you too, Randy. I'll back at you. Thank you,
sweetheart.
Me.
Thanks for coming.
You bet.
And now the show is over, girl, so thanks for listening. It's been a vibe, and damn it, don't you dare forget to subscribe. I promise next week will be 10 times better than even the last. Except when it's not. The amazing Jane Lynch, thanks for chatting with me. You're simply best in show. My little heart's filled with glee. And that's the last word of